Show, the Wednesday edition. Mr. Relevant, Alex Stroph, Josh DiMaggio, Will Summers, Hunter Vaughn with you on this fine Wednesday. The Packers lose Monday Night Football 10-7 to the Philadelphia Eagles at Lambeau Field on Monday Night Football. So we will get to all that. But before we do that, I just want to say I love the MIA, man. I love the MIA. I'm in Lambeau Field on Monday night, and I didn't get his name. I couldn't find him after this interaction happened, and I know everybody's going to be mad at me for this. But there's a guy that yelled, Stroph! I turned around, and he gave me a fist bump, and he said, Mr. Relevant, best show ever. And I dapped him up, and I was standing in somebody's way, so I had to get out of the way. And then when I went to go use the restroom later, he was gone. So I didn't get to catch his name. But shout out to that guy, whoever that was, for hanging out with us. Now, also, before the show even starts today, Matthew chimes in on ESPN Milwaukee on YouTube. It's the Joshy Reaction Show. I've been waiting almost 48 hours for this. One of my first thoughts after that game on Monday was, I cannot wait till Wednesday's Mr. Irrelevant. So we love the MIA. We appreciate you choosing us, hanging out with us, reacting with us to the Packers' second straight loss, 10-7 Monday night to the Philadelphia Eagles. Packers now 5-3-1 and in third place in the NFC North. Will, I'm gonna give you the opportunity to victory lap right off the front. Lions in first place, Bears in second place, Packers in third place.
Don't worry, I'm on the phone with Google. I have been for the past couple hours trying to figure out why that is, how that is, because it can't be possible with Jordan Love and Micah Parsons, right? They can't be in third. So I'm working furiously. I just want everyone to know that I don't think that's right.
Thanks, Will. We appreciate you. I hated that, but it was funny.
I'm trying to vindicate you.
Stop.
I don't believe that.
This is becoming one of my favorite bits.
I cannot stand that the lowly Chicago Bears are somehow in front of that can't be right. I refuse to believe it. The guy with the failed quarterback.
Stop.
Are you willing, Stroph?
Yeah.
So glad this question wasn't coming towards me.
Yeah, no, and you have every right.
You do.
Yeah. Are you now willing to start being actually critical of Matt LaFleur? Because last time we talked to the MIA, first of all, you were trying to sell. You had this level of belief and confidence that was, from the start, pretty clearly false, a fake.
It was a little bit of a, it was a little bit of a farce, yeah.
Yeah,
I'll admit that.
A little bit of a put on, because every time we said, well, what if that isn't the case, your entire sort of worldview collapsed around your beliefs in the Packers. And I think we saw the worst coach game from the Green Bay Packers since Mike McCarthy was fired. They're the only comp in terms of ineptitude is the games in which we said, you have Aaron Rodgers, you have to be better than this. Mm-hmm. With Mike McCarthy, which then shortly then led to in sort of unprecedented midseason firing for the Packers, a team who typically never does something like that.
All right. So the question is, am I willing to admit it? And here's what I've come up with. Uh-oh. Between my drive back from Green Bay, listening to ESPN Wisconsin yesterday. I was off yesterday, but I listened all day long.
I cooked yesterday morning, by the way.
You had a great show. I listened to most of it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's why I love what we do, because I am a fan at the end of the day, right? Like, I never pretend to be a journalist, right?
Yeah, and here's the thing. We fan in different ways.
Definitely.
You fan positive, and I get mad because I want them to do better so much that it makes me angry. And you go, well, if I just ignore this, I could just have a good time, which is probably healthier.
Probably. But the issue is, especially with this team,
right?
I can't ignore it.
We are the same person, but from different sides of the coin.
Correct. But it's why I love what we do and love that we get to do this, because we are all fans on this program, right? And it is therapeutic in some weird way to listen to people call in and talk about it and hear different perspectives on what the hell went wrong. Anytime our favorite team loses, whether that's the Packers or the Brewers or the Bucks or the Badgers or Marquette, or I don't know. There's going to be a lot of Wisconsin Herd fans soon. I would like to get to that and what we missed. But regardless, whoever your favorite team is, it is nice to know there's a community and there's people reacting to this. So as I was driving from Green Bay yesterday, driving back down here to Milwaukee, I just kept thinking about something I enjoy doing, something that's therapeutic for me, and that's grocery shopping. grocery shopping is therapeutic for me. I do it once a week. I go. It's silent. I go through the sections. I look at the produce. I grab different things. And in a grocery store, here's the analogy I came up with. Everything has a shelf life. Whether that's bread or vegetables or rice, which has a very long shelf life, and flour, which has a long shelf life. Everything has a shelf life.
Wait till you learn about canned foods.
I was going to say, what do we do with non-perishables?
The food that they put in the bunkers.
Those have an expiration date, too, though. It's just much longer, right? And that could be the Matt LaFleur in this scenario. 7 years. 7 years is a long time, right? And I feel like we got to a point early in the season where, like, I know we've all, you probably shouldn't do this, but we've all been in this position where you're at home and you see, like, you've got, let's say you've got a loaf of bread and you haven't really made a dent yet. But one end of the loaf of bread, there's like a little piece of mold on it. So you're like, oh, I'll just cut it down the middle and I can still use the other half of the bread.
Which, I've learned because I used to do this.
Mm-hmm.
If you have, because of the way fungus works, if you have it on the end, you have it throughout.
Correct.
Yeah.
But people do this still.
We've all done it like 3 months ago.
Yeah, we've all done it, right?
Said, well, the other side.
So it feels to me like the Packers offense early in the year, there was some concerning moments and some concerning themes occurring specifically in the Packers offense. And we were kind of treating it like that loaf of bread, right? Just, okay, we'll chop it off. We'll chop off that half of the muffin. The other half of the muffin's fine. And now I think we're realizing the whole damn loaf has mold on it. And why I bring up shelf lives is because in the NFL, it's really hard to survive as a head coach for 7 seasons. It just is. Leashes are not that long unless they're earned. And Matt LaFleur getting 1 seeds and leading MVP seasons and winning a playoff game with the youngest team in the NFL 2 years ago has extended his shelf life. But I think we're at a point now at 5-3-1, about halfway through the 2025 season, that we can acknowledge the league has caught up to Matt LaFleur. The guy we have touted as an offensive genius and a creative game planner and a creative play caller, he's lost his fastball. Is that to say he can't get it back? I'm still holding out hope that he can. But through 9 games this NFL season, this offense that was geared up to be really good, right? When we look at how this offense has been constructed, they invested in a first-round wide receiver for the first time since Javon Walker. They invested in the offensive line by adding Aaron Banks, moving Elton Jenkins to center. We thought that would be good. You add Josh Jacobs last year in free agency, one of the premier backs in the league. You pay Jordan Love $55 million a year because you view him as a guy that can be a top five, top three quarterback at some point in his career. You have all these different pieces that, when you put them together, should create an incredibly successful offense in the National Football League. But it is very clear through 9 games, it is not working. The play caller, in this case Matt LaFleur, looks lost. He looks like he lacks creativity rather than is filled with creativity, like we have always thought he is. You talk about Jordan Love, and this is something I've said many times this season, Josh, you'll back me up on this. To me, it still appears Matt LaFleur doesn't trust Jordan Love in high-pressure, high-stakes situations. But something that's actually more concerning to me in regards to Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur, specifically their relationship, is as I'm there at the game on Monday night, I am staring at them during timeouts slash high-pressure situations slash high-stakes drives. And I'm noticing things. They're not communicating. There's no collaboration between the two of them. Matt LaFleur's talking into Jordan Love's helmet, and that's that. And you think back to high-level, MVP-level quarterbacks and their offensive play callers, there's almost always communication or collaboration or discussion or debate about things they should do. An inside zone being called out on 4th-and-1 by a defensive lineman is about as rock bottom as you can hit it as an offense. To the point where a defensive lineman is yelling, inside zone this way, inside zone this way. Nobody calls a timeout. Nobody adjusts on the fly. And they fall short on 4th-and-1. Which, by the way, the team you're playing, well, they're pretty darn good at converting on plays like that. So, I struggle with Where is the creativity? Where is the genius offensive game plan? So to answer your question in an incredibly long-winded fashion, Joshy, am I ready to come around that Matt LaFleur has stunk this year? Absolutely.
It's more than just stinking, and maybe it's going to take you a while to get there. Whether or not he trusts Jordan Love, I think, is beside the fact. And it feels like an excuse people are trying to use to say, like, oh, Matt LaFleur just hasn't been really bad. The 4th-and-1 call that you're talking about, the Eagles knew, because the Packers have put on that exact situation on film 5 times, to the tune where within a couple hours, Benjamin Solak for ESPN was able to do a cut up and show you all the times they've done that and how obvious it is.
It was like 6 times through 9 games.
It extends even further. There was a situation where the Eagles are in big trouble with one of their cornerback positions. Quinyon Mitchell's very good. Cooper DeJean, also pretty good. And then they have Adoree Jackson, who is a massive issue. They traded for multiple cornerbacks before the trade deadline to try and find another option suitable at that position. What ended up happening was Quinyon Mitchell, likely an all-pro, was targeted to an extent across all sides of the field and all different wide receivers, that it leads me to believe, based on formation and players on the field, the Eagles' defense was able to determine who is likely to be Jordan Love's first read,
mm-hmm.
and how can we put our corner in the best spot to follow that guy around.
Yep.
That's really the only way that happens, other than, wow, they got extremely lucky that was the main target, because a first read is where the ball goes most often. It's such a valuable trait for a wide receiver to be that first read, because that is often where the play is designed to go. Matt LaFleur has simplified, dumbed down, and gotten so conservative that other defenses know specifically, if we show too high, they are going to run into it because they think they have a numbers advantage in the box, and that's going to work for them. The problem is they can't run for bleep. Josh Jacobs averaged 3.5 yards in the game, and Matt LaFleur had the nerve to get in front of everyone and say, yeah, I thought the run game was effective. No, it wasn't. 3.5 yards per carry is the worst mark in all the NFL. If being the worst in all the NFL
is effective,
then there is no floor. There is no bottom. There is no, well, it actually is bad. He's grown stubborn. He's grown convinced that he knows better than everyone. He micromanages and demands all the control. Because if you listen to Jordan Love, when asked about, hey, they called out that 4th-and-1 play, did you call that? He said, no, that's Matt's call. Because he doesn't give Jordan Love any of the ability to run an offense, to collaborate, to do things they do well. Jordan Love is best when he's attacking downfield, being aggressive. The Packers have erased the intermediate part of the field and the middle of the field.
Yeah.
They're not targeting that area of the field. Jordan Love, if you correct all his stats and look at like expected points added, completion percent over expected, all the things that sort of you can numerically determine with advanced numbers how well someone's doing, he's great.
Yeah,
he's one of the top 5 quarterbacks in all the NFL. The main factor is you have a head coach who is either too stubborn, unwilling, or has been passed by.
Mm-hmm.
And the offensive line not blocking well is a factor.
Definitely.
But it's,
they've been awful.
It's incumbent on the head coach to recognize, hey, they are trying. They want us to run the ball and do the short dink and dunk stuff because they know they're better off with you trying that because you're not as good as it and at it. And it's really hard for us to win football games when Jordan Love is attacking the downfield.
Mm-hmm.
All that is very simple, very straightforward. And since the Cleveland game, when they just went to high safety, everybody has replicated that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worked every time. And I want to point out, the guy in Cleveland, Jim Schwartz, calling the defense, he's known for not doing too high safety. In that game, he called the highest percentage of too high safety of his career. He did it so much. And then everyone saw that and said, oh my God, Matt LaFleur combusts. He doesn't know what to do.
Which, frankly, doesn't make any
sense. It's embarrassing.
It doesn't make any sense, though.
You want to know what happened against the Carolina Panthers? We talked about them. They went and played the Saints. Attack downfield. Guess what? It worked. The too high shell stuff doesn't mean you can't pass downfield. It's just you're not calling the plays to do it, and you're unwilling to try.
Mm-hmm.
Matt LaFleur has until the end of the season to figure it out, and if he doesn't,
he'll be gone.
He's going to be coaching elsewhere.
Yeah, he'll be gone. And look, he'll get a job. He's going to be a really highly sought-after candidate.
He'll probably reinvent his offense.
Yeah, and he probably will do it successfully. I think we all realize the level of coach he is, but it is not working right now. And when we talk about what Brian Gutekunst, and I understand he does not make this call. It's Ed Policy who makes this call. But you got to understand what Brian Gutekunst said back in January after the loss to the Eagles, ironically, in the wild card round. I think it's about time we start competing for championships around here. Brian Gutekunst has lived up to that. Now, we can certainly knock him for the free agent signings this year. Nate Hobbs and Aaron Banks have both been failures. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Taking the swing on Matthew Golden in the first round of the draft has not worked as well as maybe we anticipated through the first 10 weeks of the season. But trading for Micah Parsons and impacting the defense in the way you did is certainly a feather in his cap. And that was a win-now move. And the defense, frankly, has done their part. The Packers have lost 3 games this year. They allowed 13 to Cleveland, 16 last week, and 10 this week in their 3 losses. 16 last week to Carolina, 10 this week to Philadelphia. That's a combined 39 points for 3 losses in the National Football League. That's an unbelievably low total for 3 losses. 39 points allowed only. If your defense, which for years and years and years and years and years with Aaron Rodgers, this defense couldn't hold teams to 10 points, couldn't hold teams to 13 points, couldn't hold teams to 16 points. Aaron Rodgers won football games by putting up 28 points and 31 points and 35 points because that's just what this offense did. And now we are in an era where I think most of the blame falls on the play caller, but some of the blame falls on the offensive line. Some of the blame falls on the quarterback. Some of the blame falls on the pass catchers. They have held teams to 13, 16, and 10 and haven't been able to get it done in any of those games. That is about as bad of an indication of where things are as you can get. Bad, 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 bad.
On first and second down, run plays that Matt LaFleur called cumulatively throughout the game, the Packers had negative 10 expected points added.
Mm-hmm.
On second and long, they ran at like nearly a 70% clip until the game got to the point where they had to sort of air it out and try and get back into it. It's become so predictable and so identifiable that when it's second and 7, mm-hmm, the two high safeties, as soon as the ball gets snapped, they come screaming down because they are so confident Matt LaFleur is going to call a run play that they're not worried about getting beat deep. The whole reason they are back there like that. It's become indefensible. It's become embarrassing. You lost Tucker Kraft and you decided to lean more into your run game. Tucker Kraft was integral to the effectiveness of the Packers run game, and it got worse. You have Luke Musgrave, who you're going to need to contribute meaningfully, and he didn't get targeted to start the game at any point. They ran run plays on 6 of the 7 first plays. It's a level of incompetence that had Matt LaFleur not had the previous success, he would have been fired by most teams.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. The record, I think, also obviously helps. If they are 2-7, we're talking about this very differently than at 5-3-1. They were in first place of the division prior to Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, and we can discount the the record has nothing to do with the coach. It has to do with the talent on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of getting creative and trying to put new things out there, maybe give guys opportunity, he decided, let's play the guy who was a wide receiver that converted to corner, that we're playing at wide receiver again, even though all throughout camp and the season has been in the defensive meeting room. Gave him 5 targets. Dontavian Wicks was back, didn't get targeted until, what, the 3rd quarter, and they actually were effectively moving the ball. Christian Watson, how is he not part of the game plan?
Yeah.
Hell, Romeo Doubs! You couldn't stop targeting the guy. Why isn't he getting targets now?
Yeah, it's...
Have you guys thought at all that maybe the reason the offensive guru has regressed to seemingly never looking like never calling a game before could be because the quarterback can't handle the offense the way that Aaron Rodgers handled Matt LaFleur's offense?
Well, Matt... It was handled Aaron,
because it seems like Matt LaFleur is just trying to redesign ways to make Jordan Love not look like he's inept.
I don't think he's run out of ways. I have a lot of thoughts on this. Josh, you go first.
The Matt LaFleur offense, what we've come to learn, Aaron Rodgers just disregarded Matt's play calls at times.
Mm-hmm.
He would get something in his headset, and he would say, no, F that, we're running this. And they didn't really talk about it, but you sort of heard indications.
Definitely.
And there was the whole, like, not supposed to audible thing. It's the same thing that goes on in San Francisco. They want you to do exactly as they say every single play. And the reason guys like, you know, we watched Jimmy G be like, wow, he's pretty effective. And then they moved on, and it was because Jimmy G liked to color outside the lines a little too much and didn't have the amount of talent to justify, like Aaron Rodgers, of, well, if he's going to color outside of the lines, it's almost always going to work. But that's a big part of it. Jordan Love, his turnover rate's incredibly low. His interceptable throw rate's incredibly low. His completion percentage is way up before they started the dink and dunk crap. It's all changed. He is that good. It's the coach doesn't. The coach might not trust him for whatever reason.
Yeah, that's the feeling I get. And Matthew
but he's
makes
wrong
a,
about
Matthew
it.
I think he's protecting him.
Matthew makes a great point on YouTube. He said we have 5 total passes before the final drive of the first half. How do you have a $55 million quarterback and only throw 5 times before the 2-minute warning?
See, the protecting him doesn't make sense. The Texans didn't protect Jordan Love as much, didn't protect Davis Mills as much as Matt LaFleur is.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Marcus Mariota's given more freedom and ability to air out the ball.
And that's the problem I'm having with this offense is, okay, if Love isn't vocal and doesn't speak his mind or doesn't want to collaborate, I shouldn't say doesn't want to collaborate, but doesn't collaborate in-game with Matt LaFleur, that's fine. But have a little gumption.
Jordan Love was the best in his career after that Pittsburgh game when they said, let her rip. We're just going to go out there and we're going to throw the ball and we're going to attack. And he was the best quarterback in football for 8 weeks. That Matt LaFleur and that approach is gone. We haven't seen it. And last year we argued, well, he's hurt. There's all the Jordan Love, there's all these factors. The only time Matt LaFleur has done that is because his back was against the wall and he was forced to do it.
Yep.
So regardless of who it is, are you ready to say that Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love are not a fit?
I've been saying it for a long time.
Josh has been saying that.
And they never will be.
Once again, I think Josh has been saying that.
They can't work together.
I think it's certainly trending that direction. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't think it's Matt LaFleur and...
This isn't
Jordan
a done
Love
deal, though.
Specifically, I think it's Matt LaFleur and any quarterback who's not a for sure future Hall of Famer.
Well, that means that future Hall of Famer / MVP is just making.
It would
Matt
need
LaFleur.
To be Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson,
Josh Allen,
Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Like, it would have to be those level of guys for him to just be like, you can do what you're going to do because he likes to micromanage.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason. None of the coaches in Green Bay go on to, well, really get hired anywhere unless Aaron Rodgers asks them to be or they're involved with the Bears. And there's a reason none of them have ever worked.
Yeah.
It's because Matt LaFleur does it all. Stanovich is offensive coordinator by title. He's not doing anything. He's not impacting how things go on offense.
Yeah.
There's one guy to point to. He's made himself the CEO. He has no inputs, and he's the one failing.
So do you think at any point in his career he was a good head coach, or was it all just accredited to Aaron Rodgers being good and him not being able to coach Jordan Love?
Well, not so much that second half, but I think the other two parts are true together. They can coexist.
I think he was more supported by Aaron Rodgers than maybe we thought.
Yeah,
and but more supported by probably guys like Devontae Adams.
Sure. That part I can hear, but also let's keep in mind how bonkers he went in year two and three of that LaFleur system.
Yeah.
And he was not doing that in the McCarthy system. Right? So the system played a role. Like, we've got to give LaFleur his flowers. Saying. Yeah.
But the system Kyle Shanahan was running at that time is vastly different from the one he's running today.
Yes, and I don't know that you can make that same case with LaFleur.
Correct. Yeah. Don't you remember when guys were just streaking wide open across the field?
Mm-hmm.
Haven't seen that. I can't imagine that's just because Jordan Love replaced Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, so I want to bring up something that we talked about a little bit last week. And I often, you know, I think this is the, I don't want to say it's the I'm giving up signal in the NFL, but it is the I'm not good enough signal in the NFL. And that is if he was to give up play calling. The issue with the idea of Matt LaFleur giving up play calling is, well, that's why he was hired, number one.
No one else can do it.
And number two, who would do it? I know this is a dumb question, and we often do this when we're in panic mode and we wonder, like, what does Adam Stanovich do? I imagine he helps during the week with game planning, but what is he doing in game? Because why is Matt LaFleur playing on his iPad? Where's Adam Stanovich in that moment?
I mean, having your back to the field.
Not a great look.
About as bad of a look as you could envision.
Not a good look.
No.
I'd imagine Stanovich is ostensibly, big word, quarterback's coach.
Well, he was the offensive line coach prior to his
promotion. Then he just manages the offensive line, basically. He's basically a positional coach.
Which is bad.
Yeah, but that's how most teams, like the Bears, Declan Doyle doesn't really do anything. You probably didn't even know his name, the offensive coordinator. Like, it's all Ben Johnson. Declan Doyle is just a tight end guy with the title of offensive coordinator.
Just a tight end guy. How's that worked out this year?
Pretty good, according to Google.
According to Google. Ah, Google. Google, Google, Google.
So I was just wondering, trying to at least get a little bit positive for you guys here. How many, like, games in a row of the offense not looking as bad as what it has would you guys change your minds about Matt LaFleur and this Packers offense? Like, do they have to go 3 weeks in a row, the rest of the season? Like, what would it take?
I don't know if wins loss is necessarily the true indicator. I think it's more so, what does it look like? Can you score points?
What about just some rhythm?
Yeah, some continuity.
I don't care what the score is. There's no rhythm.
No, it feels really messy. I still think Matt LaFleur can win his job back. I mean, what you do at the end of the year is ultimately what matters. They get to the NFC Championship game somehow, which feels impossible right now after week 10, entering week 11. If they get to the NFC Championship game, I think he's back.
But I mean, what I need to see is I need to see them scoring 27, 30 points.
Consistently.
Yes.
Yeah.
I need to see them coming out and putting points on the board early, because when you have a good defense, them playing with the lead and forcing teams to pass the ball is only going to be better for your defense.
Yeah, that's something you and I talked about a few weeks ago. Is I thought last year they needed early leads. This year they win games with early leads.
Yes.
They needed early leads to keep pace last year.
Uh-huh.
Where this year, I think if you get an early lead, you can end a game early. And, they've done that.
You want opponents to be in a spot where they're putting the ball at risk and they aren't just playing keep away like they were, like the Panthers did.
Yeah. 0-0 halftime score, by the way. Woof.
Imagine going to that game. That would have sucked.
It was warmer in the stadium than it was outside.
Straightforward, lack of wind, body heat.
Correct. But like, it actually felt really nice in there, because I did the pregame show, obviously, outside. And in our Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin mobile studio up in Green Bay, kind of a wind tunnel. You get shot right in the face. And I got in the Lambo, and I was like, whoa, it's like warm in here. Crazy. Everybody was bundled up, though. A lot of Eagles fans at Lambeau Field on Monday.
The Eagles fan base travels surprisingly well in the NFL. Going to the Cowboys-Eagles game, like, there were way more Eagles fans in Dallas than I expected.
I was talking to a fan of Green Bay Game Day who was in from Connecticut, and he was asking me, he was like, does it seem like the visiting fans have gotten more and more the last couple of years? And I said, yes. Like, even the Bengals a month ago, I felt like there was a lot of Bengals fans. I didn't even know there was a lot of Bengals fans, and there was a lot in Green Bay. Carolina, yeah, there was a bit, but that's normal, right? Because Lambeau's such a destination. But I would say against contenders the past few years, it's almost felt like a infiltration of sorts. Like Detroit has traveled so damn well that it's like 40, 60 Detroit fans to Green Bay fans. Monday was probably like 30, 70 would be my guess. And everybody had those cream cheese hats. And I asked one guy who was sitting by me, I was like, where'd you get that? And he goes, it was a free handout. So somebody printed a million of those off and just handed them out. So anyway, there's your fun fact of the day. All right, let's get the stock up, stock down. We do this each and every day or two after games. Some stocks go up, some stocks go down. It's not an indication of the whole season, except, well, today it is. I'm going to keep it relatively simple and stock up, stock down today. Let's start, Will, with a stock up.
Stock up.
To the defense. Will, let's go quickly to stock down.
Stock down.
To the offense. I mean, that's as simple of a stock up, stock down as you can have today, right? I have lost a lot of faith in the ability to win games because the offense can't get points. And defensively, clearly they're good enough to hang with anybody, right? I referenced this stat earlier. They've lost three times this year. They've only allowed 39 points in those games, 13, 16, 10. If you hold opponents to that many points against an offense that is orchestrated and constructed the way this Packers offense is, with the play caller you have, with the quarterback you have, and with some of the pieces around in the skill positions that you have, you should be able to score 17 points. You should be able to score 21 points. That's not asking a whole lot out of this offense. And they have lost games while allowing 13, 16, and 10. That is really, really, really bad.
I don't really have much to add here. I feel like I've got everything.
Offense, yes, stock up to the defense, stock down to the offense.
Yeah, I will make note that the guy I've been pumping for weeks was the highest graded player on the field, Carrington Valentine, for the defense. He also, was it like one of the six targets was a completion? He had a pass breakup as well in there. It's unfortunate that it took weeks and weeks and weeks to recognize what everyone was talking about in training camp.
Yep.
That, well, one of the best guys on the field they have here with a lot of talent out there.
Yeah, he did a nice game.
Is Carrington Valentine. He's a cornerback, and he's not Quinyon Mitchell, so he's going to get beat. He's going to have a bad game or two. But he has been better than all the other options at corner every time he gets the opportunity.
Okay, so I agree with that as a stock up. I'm actually confused with what to do with this stock. So I'm going to throw the name out, and then we can determine whether or not it's a stock up, a stock down, or a stock neutral. Okay, this is a little bit of a twist on stock up, stock down today. You mentioned the position of cornerback. There was a cornerback playing wide receiver a lot on Monday night. It was Bo Melton.
Bo Melton's stock could not be further into the dust. I mean,
stock down.
Bad game, special teams. Bad game as a wide receiver. He lined up improperly, costing them their biggest chunk play of the game. He dropped a pass on fourth down, and then he ran into the end zone, costing them a really advantageous spot to bury the Eagles.
Five targets, two catches, 28 yards.
I can't even be really that mad at him for the wide receiver stuff.
No, it's kind of hard to be because
the dude that you made him a cornerback and then asked him to play wide receiver. And the reason why he outsnapped Malik Heath, beyond me. Malik Heath has way more snaps on offense than Bo Melton does to this point. And your Savion Williams, the guy who you brought in to be like the gadget guy, apparently just is incapable of running routes and getting open. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, they've tried to justify his spot on the roster, and he hasn't been able to do the things they need to do when they are down guys and talent. So I also will say, just by his absence and the way the passing game looked, I think I have to give a stock up to Matthew Golden.
stock up.
Who didn't play?
His absence, it was apparent. Bull Melton was out there dropping passes, lining up wrong. Guys were not as open. The passing offense didn't work at all. There must be value to that. Because
what does that make Tucker Kraft then? The greatest football player of all time?
Well, he was the best tight end in football.
He was. Yeah, but it would look that bad without him. He might be the greatest.
He might be the greatest player of all time. Man, he actually might be onto something back there.
He's already a Packers Hall of Famer.
For non-Micah Parsons on this football team, if anybody was going to evolve into the greatest football player of all time, he would be the betting favorite, non-Micah Parsons.
I mean, sure. I guess I don't know how to categorize that.
Matthew chimes in, stock down, not using the substitute kicker. Yeah. Substitute teacher,
I mean, that...
Stock down.
What the hell was that?
Which part are we referring to?
The broadcast saying this is the first time he's felt semi-healthy. Obviously something he got from Brandon McManus. Them not trying field goals from 57 yards. And then trotting his ass out there for a 64-yarder. That Joe Buck heard it hit the foot and said, no chance. I mean, what are we doing? We have this guy in the roster. Clearly, he's not healthy enough to kick. 57, you should have some faith in your kicker to make that.
At 57, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Also, that whole situation, they talked about it on the broadcast, but I swear about 10 years ago, the NFL said if a timeout has been called, you cannot kick the ball and it's a delay of game penalty. Did they change that rule at some point? Or am I just like making this up in my head? I swear that should have been a penalty.
That was a rule.
What? I don't think that's a rule.
I don't think that's a
rule. Because I thought it was a whole thing when you were like trying to ice the kicker, and it was like if there's been like so much time after the timeout, you can't just like go and still kick it. Like, I thought that was a thing.
I don't think that. I think there was a time, and it would like have to be egregious, but if the snap gets off, they just let them kick it.
Okay.
Some kickers don't want to kick it, too.
Yeah, and some do because they think it helps them. Good thing
McManus did, somebody did, showed him they were.
Somebody did a long-term study about this, and I have no idea why I read it. But icing the kicker is extremely effective if you call the timeout in time for them to not kick it.
Mm.
Once the kicker kicks it, mm-hmm. the effectiveness of that goes way, way up. In terms of like where they were able to track it, where it was like extremely effective. So if you're going to do the ice the kicker thing, it works. You just have to do it before they even get close. Like, you want the kicker to get into his, like, starting to do his positioning, and then you call it. Like, don't even make it close.
I've seen people talk about how you, like, wait until, because they'll do, like, the three steps back, and as they're getting through that second step is when you should do it, because then, like, you're throwing them off their rhythm of their setup.
Yes, they started the process.
Yep. That's one of my favorite things to like call that out when you know they're going to ice them. Be like, got to call it now. Call the timeout now. You're welcome.
It's remarkable they even got the ball back. And that was even an opportunity for Brandon McManus, because I don't know what the hell the Eagles were doing there by throwing the ball. But anyway, here we are. A couple more quick stock up to Evan Williams. I thought he had a really nice game defensively.
Yeah. I mean, he got beat for a touchdown, but that was a remarkable play by a very good player.
Yep. Bingo.
Good players make those plays.
Yes, they do. Yep. And that's exactly what happened on that
touchdown. Much like Saquon Barkley's big play as well.
Yep. Oh, yeah, that was brutal, though.
Yeah, I mean
there was nobody in front of him.
Yeah, it's just like that's going to happen. You managed to not really feel A.J. Brown, who I believe I saw, and maybe confirm this someone, but he was on a stream and said, if you own me in fantasy, drop me.
Yeah,
he did.
Hilarious quote.
And Nick Sirianni went back and forth with a reporter today when asked why they didn't target him. He was only targeted, what, three times, twice on the first drive, for first two drives, mm-hmm. and then only the one at the end of the game. Sirianni said, what is this, debate club? To the reporter today. So clearly there's a little bit of unhappiness
what
going on
with
AJ
Brown. Mean?
I don't know. But the Eagles, by the way, are 7-2. Like, let's relax.
Yeah, Philly media is something else.
The streamer also asked him if everything was good, and he goes, no, where have you been? Family's good, everything else, no. It's a bleep show.
Yeah, I don't think they're winning the Super Bowl.
He did this last year, though, and they won it. He was reading books on the sideline.
They did almost the same exact thing last year.
I forgot about the books.
I don't know if another year of it is going to cause it to wear thin, but...
Oh, there's some really good teams in the NFC.
Yeah, the Rams. Very good.
I'm all in on the Rams.
The Seahawks just score a billion points.
The Seahawks actually may be very good.
They scored like 38 points in the first half, it felt like.
There was two fumble recoveries for touchdowns.
Yeah, they just score fast.
But to add to that, their three offensive drives to start the game, they also scored touchdowns on. So.
Yeah, the game was over right away.
That's how you get JSN. Down 35.
JSN had, what was it, three catches, and then his day was over.
Yeah. And what do you need him for?
Yeah, right. What do you need him for? Incredible stuff. Well, so yeah, the NFC is really good, and the Eagles are atop that, right? They're at 7-2, but the Seahawks, obviously very good. The Rams, very good. The Buccaneers, still got to figure them out a little bit. The Lions, I still think, are very good. The Packers are certainly behind some of those teams.
Like what teams?
The ones I just listed. The Lions, the Bucks, the Rams, the Seahawks, the Eagles.
Don't want to add another team there.
Those five.
No,
just those five.
Yep, that's right.
We could talk about the Niners, but I don't think so.
Too many injuries.
Agreed. Well, isn't that kind of always?
Whatever it is, that team is. I saw somebody, and this is a little bit of a tangent. I saw somebody who covers them say that they had a theory that they were floating out that they're the location to an electric substation in San Francisco, maybe causing more injuries to happen to the players there. People didn't take too kindly to that, and they called it conspiracy theory and all that. I don't know enough in that science realm, but that's where they've gotten to, where they're doing analysis of what's going on or in around the stadium, not on the football field, that could be causing them to have so many injuries.
Okay, well, that's enough of that.
Could also be just making Mac Jones good, because that doesn't make
sense. I like that you clarified at one point during that tangent. Yeah, some people didn't like it and called it a conspiracy theory. What the hell else would it be?
Just a guy sharing ideas.
Okay, fair enough.
What's wrong with that?
Hey, can somebody tell the MIA to calm down? We got people calling each other dumbasses in the chat right now.
Who was that?
Chef Ed called Michael a dumbass. Michael said right at the beginning of the show, "God, this show sucks. Bye." And he's been here the entire time, so appreciate you watching,
he's
Michael.
He's also calling Craig on me.
Oh, no.
Nobody loves our content more than Michael, even though he says he hates it.
Before we get to Will's Week and reviewing what we missed, I do just want to say two notes on this Sunday's game between the Packers and the Giants. Note one is announced today by their offensive coordinator, Mike Kafka, I think is how you say it. Kafka. I went to school with a last name like that. It was Kafka, so I don't know. Kafka. He announced that if Jackson Dart doesn't, it sounds this way. It's been reported a couple different ways, but it sounds to me like if Jackson Dart doesn't clear concussion protocol, it will be Jameis Winston who starts on Sunday. Otherwise, he will be the backup to Dart, making Russell Wilson QB3. So it will be Winston, or Dart this weekend between the Packers and the Giants, which, to be real honest with you, I think Jameis Winston is the worst thing that could happen to the Packers.
I'm terrified of either of those quarterbacks. If it's Jackson Dart and he clears concussion protocol, or Jameis. Nobody plays with more reckless abandon that could win them a game
than either of those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, there's the fired coach theory also that Brian Daboll was like.
Also, Jameis Winston, as much as he wins you games, he loses them.
That's true.
So there is opportunity to have a great defensive game ton.
The Packers have really struggled to force turnovers this year. I think that fumble on Monday was only their sixth turnover that they forced this year. Maybe they could get that number up a little bit.
Seeing the sack numbers and turnover numbers wouldn't be shocking. It'd be fun.
Yeah, that's true.
I've said this before, though. The biggest thing the Packers hate to see coming is a team that has nothing to lose, and there is no team in the NFL that has less to lose than the Giants.
The fired coach theory is real. Like, I used it in my pick'em this past week. I picked the Jets, and I know their coach wasn't fired, but they traded everybody last week. So I was like, well, they've got nothing to lose. They're going to be Cleveland.
Remember how much people galvanized around Rich Bisaccia?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Great point. They made the playoffs that year, didn't they? Or they fell like a game short when he took over as the interim coach for the Raiders? Yeah, you're right. You're right. So the other part on this game, Packers-Giants noon on Sunday, is the Packers are 7.5-point favorites.
Yeah.
Does that feel right?
So here's the thing. With the way Vegas does it, yes. And the way they determine spreads, like, it's not just simply what have they done recently. It's like quality of team. It's
not even that the winning by the touchdown thing. It's actually the hook that bothers me. I figured 6.5.
I thought it would be closer to that. But, I mean, if you've bet against the Packers, and I don't know, after week two, you've probably made a good amount of
probably
money.
Probably doing all right, yeah.
I imagine the people are pretty happy about that. Because, yeah, they typically don't cover spreads. The fact it's only 7.5 kind of tells you that they're dialing it back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how big that spread was 2 weeks ago? 14.5? 13.5 did it finish at?
I don't remember where it closed that, but yeah, it was right around there. It was around two touchdowns.
The Giants are not a better team than the Carolina Panthers.
No.
You're going on the road, so there is this translation of home versus road, but that would still only be a 10.5 point spread.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's adjusting down. The Packers are still 5-2-1. 3-1. 3-1? 5-3-1?
5-3-1, yeah. Well, I imagine you can hear Joshy more on that spread and other things on this game on the Weekly Wager tonight, live from Pottawatomie Sportsbook. That show begins on YouTube at 6 o'clock.
I do have to say this because Michael calls everyone else a knows-everything guy, even though he said he correctly predicts all the scores, even though he predicted the Packers to win. Point spreads are not determined to even them out. They are made for books to make money.
Thank you for not calling anyone a dumbass.
That is the number one thing a sportsbook is invested in. They do hedge their bets in cases, but oftentimes, you'll see 90% of public money is on this number, and then they all lose. Because a sportsbook's goal is to take your money.
80%,
not to be 50-50.
80% of the money was on the Eagles on Monday.
Yeah.
So that turned out all right.
Yeah, I mean, that spread went from Packers favored 2.5 to the Eagles favored 1.5.
Yeah, but that kind of all happened on Monday, right? Because I think it was still 2.5 on Sunday.
When I looked at like 6:30... Pottle was even, so it was
6:30 Monday or Sunday.
Monday, 6:30 Monday morning.
Morning.
Okay, it was completely even, and then by game time, I believe it had gotten all the way to 1.5.
Eagles ended up being.
I mean, moving that many points is crazy.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you're the Packers, and people are realizing, wait a minute, that offense isn't very good, is it? So, all right. Well, I don't know if this will be good. I don't know if this will be bad. I don't know if this will make me angry, if this will make me laugh. It is time now for our resident Bears fan to do his best Chris Berman impression and lead us through a Wednesday edition, back to the OG time, of Will Summers Week in Review.
Let's start in Chicago, fellas. How about it? I'm just going chronologically here. Let's start in Chicago, where the Bears hosted Jackson Dart and the Giants. The Bears would get on the board first as Kyle Manung Guy Fieri cooked up an 8-yard touchdown run to give the Bears a 7-0 lead. Early in the second quarter, Jackson smoked the Bears defense like a dart as he ran in a touchdown from the 3 yards out to make it 7-7. One thing you gotta remember about Young Ho is he hasn't lost his coup, as Young Ho Koo hit a 32-yard field goal before halftime to give the Giants a 10-7 lead. Early in the third quarter, it was Jackson again as he looked like Bon Jovi the way he sent a shot through the dart of the Bears defense with a 24-yard touchdown run to give the Giants a 17-10 lead. Jackson Dart would later leave the game with a concussion, and I felt like I was having deja vu as Young Hoku netted another field goal to make it 20-10. This one's probably over, right? 20-10 late in the fourth quarter. Well, don't tell that to Iceman Caleb Williams, who found his Maverick and Rome Odunze for a 2-yard touchdown pass to make it 20-17. After a Giants 3-and-out, Caleb Williams was asked, "How do you like your eggs?" And he said, "Scrambled," as he ran in a 17-yard touchdown to seal the deal for the Bears to move them to 5-3-1. Oh, wait. They're not 5-3-1. They're 6-3. And third in the... Oh, sorry. Second in the NFC North. I confused them with another team. Let's go up north now to the best football team in the state the past 2 weeks, the Wisconsin Badgers.
Yeah.
Who beat the Washington Huskies. Come on, guys. Air horn, Hunter. Strofe, Josh. Wisconsin Badgers win? No? Okay. Also, the Packers played. Matt LaFleur modeled his offense after Forrest Gump in the first half, as he would not stop running. Right before the first, the end of the half, the Packers had a promising drive, but then Jordan Narcolepsy Love did what he does best and turned over the ball. After a riveting first half of football, the Eagles offense finally melted the Packers defense for some points when Philly cheese Jake Elliott kicked a 39-yard field goal to make it 3-0. Early in the fourth quarter, Hurts looked like Vanessa Carlton the way he was jailing his way downtown to the end zone where he found Devontae, who burned the Packers secondary to smithereens as Jalen Hurts found Devontae Smith for a 36-yard touchdown to make it 10-0. On the ensuing Packers drive, LL Cool Jacob said, "I need a touchdown," and brought the Packers to within 3 with a 6-yard run. Down 3 with 27 seconds to go, the Packers would get into Lucas Haversick's field goal range, but too bad he was inactive as McMahon assed it up again as his 64-yard field goal attempt almost hit Strofe in section 113. Imagine paying to watch that. Sheesh. As the Packers lost to fall to 6-3. Oh, wait, that's the Bears. To fall to 5-3-1 and now sit in third in the NFC North. I'm sorry in advance to the MIA for being mean. With your Will's Week in Review, I'm Will Summers.
All right, a couple follow-up questions on that.
Yeah, okay, I'll give it to you.
That was mean.
No, it's fine.
Can you pronounce the Giants kicker's name?
Young Hoku.
All right. So that is incorrect. It's Young Waku.
Oh, geez.
Whoops.
You saying Young Ho over and over and over again was making me giggle, and I wasn't sure that was intentional.
I'm going to come clean. I thought his name was the way Will said it all along.
Nope, Young Waku.
No, it's Young Hoku. You are wrong.
Since when is it not Young Way?
Since never. I just looked it up.
Okay. We're going to debate this one.
It's not a debate.
That's an unfortunate first name. I just always thought it wasn't.
I'm going to say this.
You're going to say?
It says Young Hui.
Hui.
Yeah.
Young Way.
That's what I found here.
Okay. So I was right.
Seems like.
Okay. No.
I was going to say, between you two getting into pronunciation.
It's not spelled that way.
No, it is not. That's correct.
It's almost like sometimes names are pronounced differently than how they're spelled.
Some words do that.
Yeah. Especially in not our native language.
I feel like I'm having deja vu right now.
That was a good one.
Deja vu was good. All in all, it wasn't as mean as I was anticipating. I could live with it. Good
I think
job.
I lost my coup.
Good Badgers pop in there, by the way. Good for the Badgers.
Congrats to the Badgers team.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Speaking of the Badgers, very real possibility here. We might have the what do you do with Carter Smith's red shirt. He wins the next 3 games. That bowl game. What do you do? He can only play in four.
If I were Carter Smith, I'd tell the University of Wisconsin to go take a hike and you're not taking my red shirt.
Yeah, that's what would actually happen. But just the fact that it is alive after a week of me making a joke about it is incredible. I'm so fired up about the football program right now.
I was flabbergasted that they actually went to him. I didn't think they'd do that.
Well, I think I had to.
Yeah, it's either that or
anything in the realm of
correct to Will's point. But he was kind of like Jackson Dart-esque spark plug. I like that out of him. Like, just kind of had no regard for human life, was running around like crazy.
The box score sucks, but if you're watching the game, you're like, this guy might be the best quarterback of all
exactly.
time.
Yeah, exactly. Box score stunk. But boy, was he running around like crazy. And just like Jordan Love. He liked getting hit. He didn't want to slide. Let's get to what we missed, which is presented by Door County Distillery. Locally produced, handcrafted, award-winning spirits made locally in Door County. They've got rums. They've got whiskeys. They've got brandies. They've got gins. They've got vodkas. All the in-betweens for you. Elevate your Thanksgiving gathering. It's coming up quick. Cherry brandy for your old-fashioneds. Maybe a little bourbon for your old-fashioneds. Maybe just a little bourbon in general. I love their bourbon at Door County Distillery. Visit the website, DoorCountyDistillery.com. Find the retailer nearest you, as well as a huge list of unique cocktail recipes. That is DoorCountyDistillery.com. I mentioned this earlier. You know where I'm going?
The G League. I have no idea.
I just got to say this real quick. I just want to get this quick pop, quick thing off my chest. The Wisconsin herd might be kind of sick.
Oh my gosh.
Are you aware who's on the roster?
Johnny Davis, and that's it.
Well, so last week they signed Victor Oladipo, the former National Player of the Year, two-time NBA All-Star, former number two overall pick.
Very keyword there.
Former?
Yes.
Yeah, he's old.
But how many knee surgeries has he?
He's wearing jersey number like 56 in the G League, which is wild to me. So Victor Oladipo on the Wisconsin.
I saw that highlight and I thought, that's got to be a different. I didn't look. I was like, that's got to be a different Oladipo.
No,
there's no way that guy is playing in the G League.
Victor Oladipo is in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. That is correct. You read it right. Johnny Davis, you were correct. 2020 Mr. Basketball, former finalist for the National Player of the Year at Wisconsin. Obviously had a great year. A great couple of years there, great career at Wisconsin. Got drafted in the first round by Washington. Hasn't really panned out. Now he's a member of the herd. And then Alex Antetokounmpo, the youngest brother of the Antetokounmpo family, is on the herd. So that team's kind of sick.
Don't they have Rice Lake legend Henry Ellenson on the team as well?
Former Marquette Golden Eagle? They don't this year. He was on the team last year. He's not on the team this year.
When you brought this up, I thought there was like going to be some breaking news, but they just have three guys.
He just read the roster.
They just have three guys whose names that you know.
Well, it's a G League team. They only have like 11
exactly,
guys in the
roster. G League.
But they have like Mark Sears is on that team. He was the really good point guard at Alabama last year.
Great.
He's on that team.
Are we hanging the banner if the Herd win the G League championship?
Oh, yeah. What would be more important to you, Josh? If the Herd win a G League championship or the Bucks winning the NBA Cup last year? Which one is more important?
The Chicago Blackhawks winning the Stanley Cup.
Hell yeah, brother.
Puck guy's back.
Play Chelsea Dagger.
Dude, I don't just have that ready to go. What are we talking about?
I know. It was a figurative, like, yeah. Play figurative. Chelsea Dagger.
Chelsea Dagger. Mm-hmm. All right, Will, what do you got?
Okay. You guys are going to have to stick with me on this one. My word today is taco. So there is, I'm not going to define the word, but there is something in the news that I wanted to talk about. Where Cam Scataboo was live streaming, and he was explaining to me, this actually made
sense. What is Scataboo live stream? Video games or what?
I don't know. It's just him on stream, and it was just him talking. And he was talking about how he eats tacos, and he says that, so instead, like we're thinking a hard shell taco, right?
Mm.
How it's like vertical, and you turn your head, right?
Yeah.
He said he doesn't let the taco dominate him, so he turns the taco this way. Instead of the taco making him turn his head, he turns the taco.
But wouldn't the
he doesn't let the taco dominate him.
But wouldn't the belongings of the taco fall out?
Not according to him. He said, are you going to dominate a taco or are you going to let it dominate you?
Cam Scannable.
This guy.
Fascinating.
This guy.
I think I'm going to stop letting tacos dominate me.
He would be a guy, if he was young, old enough, he would still be doing Chuck Norris jokes in 2025. If he had come up in
that. What a random.
That's just the type of guy he is where, like, that they just think that type of stuff is so funny. I mean, he's an absolute dummy.
Do you see the video? There's an iconic video of in the Arizona State. They're walking out.
Yes.
Slamming his head against the brick wall, and someone walks by, and they go, what exercise is that? And it's just making like the
not
worst sound ever. Yeah, like they're wearing white helmets too. It's getting all scraped up. Just banging his head against the wall.
I think if I had to interact with Cam Scataboo, I'd hate him. But watching him is a delight.
I think
he's
you just have to try.
One of one.
Do you meet people often where you're like, I hate that guy?
Hell yeah.
You?
Of course.
Okay.
I think you'd have to try to like wrestle him off the rip to gain his respect.
Yeah, even if he beats you.
Yeah.
He has to know you're in for a duel.
Yeah.
We all have those friends, like, especially growing up as men, like the friend who was always like tackling you or punching you.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, just leave me alone. Stop. Can I just watch the game, for Christ's sake?
Just wants to pick on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a lot of friends like that picked on me. Can you believe that one?
No, not at all. I share none of the similarities to that. it's just the friend who's always being a pest.
Yep.
And it's like they have energy and they need it to go somewhere. So it ends up in them punching you, sack taps, all that.
Or you'd just be standing up and it'll kind of like line up like a wrestler does in college where it'll just start getting low on you.
Yes.
Like, I have friends that do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It could be anywhere too, in a bar.
Matthew chimes in, that guy, Joshy, was the best man at my wedding.
Exactly. One of my best friends is that guy. I mean, he always, for some reason, also has pocket knives, and he's always
Oh, doing the butterfly thing? Yeah, yeah.
It's like, stop it!
But those are also the guys that...
You're gonna hurt yourself!
You make the call at 2 a.m. because you need somebody. He's right there.
Yes.
Like, they're lunatics, but they're ready to go for you when you need them.
Amazing. All right, well, let's get out of here. Will, nice job today. Tacos.
Thank you.
Don't let the taco dominate
I'm no longer letting tacos dominate me. Taco Dominator.
Good. Good. Got a question for me or no?
Nope. Oh, yeah. How would you evaluate your program today and your performance specifically?
Josh, can you do the rankings?
I don't know if I should be doing the rankings. I think we need a self-evaluation. That's what we're going for here.
But particularly only me.
Yeah.
I thought I had a good day today. All in all, I thought I led the conversation well. I thought it was creative. I liked talking about bread and grocery shopping as therapeutic activity.
We have a flaw in sort of our whole beginning salvo, let's call it.
Salvo.
Yeah.
Define that for us.
What did he say?
I don't know. Salvo?
You can Google it. Spelled just like it sounds. I thought you had a particularly good show for what we've seen recently out of you.
A simultaneous discharge of artillery.
Wow. Right? That's right.
See
right?
How it makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
He comes in here, he comes guns a-blazing.
Yeah, salvo.
Fires off some takes.
There we go. All right, that will do it for us today. Appreciate you hanging out with us. We do this every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, beginning at 12:30 Central, ESPN Milwaukee, ESPN Madison on YouTube. You can also find us, ESPN Wisconsin app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, Dan the man, Will number one, seems biased.
Yeah, a little biased.
That seems unbiased.
A little biased.
He's just like you, just calls it like he sees it.
Yeah, that's how I do it.
Mike, Matthew 1, Matthew 2, Chef Ed, Dan the man. Good to see you all. Hanging out with us. Joseph S. was in the chat a while as well. I probably missed a couple other people. But appreciate you interacting, hanging out with us. We'll be back with you on Friday, beginning at 12:30 Central. We'll talk to you then. Peace.